Hello and welcome to Leading Into Tomorrow, a podcast series from EY, looking at how governments are using technology-driven strategies to help deliver their visions of a better future. I'm your host, Kate Borsay, and each episode we're joined by expert guests from around the world sharing their specialist insight. Our focus this time is on the transformation and delivery of digitally inclusive childcare services. Joining me are Danielle Barnes, EY America's Government and Public Sector Leader. Hello, Danielle.
Hello, Kate.
And Justin Brown, Secretary of Human Services in Oklahoma. Hi, Justin.
Hello, Kate. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Danielle, let's start with you. You focus on health and human services and transforming services to vulnerable families. Give us the big picture right now in terms of the challenges and scale of the problem that families with children under five have accessing childcare services.
Yeah, I think it's important that we start by saying it's no secret that American families are facing a childcare crisis. I'm a parent. I have personally faced this crisis, having two children in childcare. Definitely took a toll on our own personal economy. When we talk about the crisis, we tend to talk about it in three buckets: access, affordability, and quality. We know that the price of childcare continues to rise. We know that the American family is spending anywhere between 8 and 19% of their income on childcare cost. Childcare employees are leaving the workforce in droves. This is an industry that is labor intensive and requires a high level of staffing. There's no simple solution to the childcare crisis, but one way that we know that we can make change is by being more innovative in connecting services for families to help tackle the affordability issue. In the U.S., I think it's important to note that millions of families are in a situation that may require them to utilize government benefits or services. There are, sadly, a substantial number of families that are not receiving these services for which they may be eligible. It can be challenging for families to figure out how to access these services, understanding the different requirements for each and how to apply for them. If government could use digital innovation, we could connect these families to services and help alleviate some of those financial pressures.
That's really interesting. We'll dig into more of those points as we go through the podcast. Justin, you've created a culture of customer-focused service delivery in Oklahoma. How are you harnessing digital technology to provide affordable services for infants and assistance for vulnerable families with young children?
Well, that's a great question. So the work that we're doing in Oklahoma really was driven by a process that we built in 2019 called Finding Our True North. And for each of our program divisions, of course, childcare is an incredibly important division. We created 3 to 5 guiding principles. The work that we're doing today in the human services system in Oklahoma, and I would also share nationally across the U.S., is rebuilding the distribution model for human services. The idea is to meet families where they are with a much more proximate delivery mechanism. Our systems have been built over the generations to be transactional in their effect, when in reality, we need to be relationship-based. We need to know who you are, know your needs, and help to serve for your whole family's needs as you navigate out of multi-generational poverty. So the big question is, yes, how do you do that? So our efforts in rebuilding a distribution model really involve two areas. One is the physical distribution model. It's how we know you in person, and it's all about people and places in the human services system. But the other, which is really important, is the digital distribution model. And that's how we build a companion that not only helps our teams deliver the proper services to you in a whole person perspective, but also empowers you to understand what is available for you and what the pathways are that help you exit this the issues that you're in. And so the digital distribution model in the childcare system is really one of the quickest transforming areas of work. And so, for example, we in Oklahoma just launched a new childcare locator, which really gives families a much, much better insight as to the availability and the quality of childcare resources in their communities. So honestly, just the ability for families to engage and to feel empowered on making their own decisions is critically important.
Okay, so a question for both of you then. How do governments make sure that childcare services are inclusive and equitable when there are deprived families without access to the internet or a mobile phone, for example? How do you make that work? Danielle, you first.
When it comes to equity, we know that far too many people are facing exclusion due to poor digital infrastructure in many regions and low levels of digital literacy in other areas. There should be an empathetic human support available if needed. And this support has to be there to help resolve complex issues or help provide help for those who are less digitally confident. For example, a dedicated caseworker that is personally on site to help citizens navigate services and offer support that are tailored to that individual service need. We also know that people still need people and that there should be a physical point of presence in every area where we can go for assistance.
Okay, so that face-to-face contact is still really important. Anything else to add to elaborate on that? I'm sure that there are a lot of similarities there in approach.
From a government perspective, our services are sort of disproportionately impacting the lower income in our communities. The programs that we operate, specifically in this case, Child Care Development Block Grant, are intended to target families who need to go to work. And so it's a support for low-income families. I would also share that we're really building the appreciation for the in-home child care settings. And so that is a much more local, proximate delivery mechanism for child care. Although, of course, we have incredible sort of institutional or facility-based child care, the in-home setting is really a beautiful model that human services systems across the country are embracing and supporting. I also did mention the idea in the last question about the physical distribution model that we're building. And that's a lot of what Danielle talked about. But the physical distribution model doesn't just mean people to people. It also means people to organizations. And organizations for us doesn't necessarily mean government organizations. And so there are nonprofit organizations all across the U.S. And of course in Oklahoma as well, who really engage on the ground and have those deep relationships with the people that we serve. So our supports need to transition to include a deeper appreciation for in-home childcare, as well as a real authentic relationship and dialogue and collaboration with organizations who are on the ground serving every day. It's all about local engagement, local empowerment, and local support from state agencies.
As e-government practices and systems evolve, things like identity management and data protection are going to be potential barriers, aren't they, to accessibility and the uptake of digital services. Danielle, what practical steps do you think need to be taken to overcome those concerns?
Yeah, Kate, people are extremely concerned about the security of their personal and financial data. While some believe that single digital IDs can lead to more streamlined, efficient services, others believe that it will heighten the risk if their data is centralized in a government database. There are also fears about confidentiality of sensitive personal information and the lack of say on what information is shared. To address these concerns, one of the things that we think would be very helpful is that government should work with trusted third parties to implement digital solutions which incorporate the highest level of security. Another option would be to embed multi-factor authentication to improve the security. People tend to be more skeptical when it comes to digital government in general, yet transparency seems to be the truly swaying factor when it comes to that use. An individual who knows what the data is used for, how it will be used, how it will be stored, tends to be more willing to submit the information.
And, you know, Justin, based on your practical experience, what else is there to add on that?
Well, there's so much to talk about in this space. And so government is working towards creating things like data lakes and those sorts of tools that would allow for data to be used in a secure and appropriate way alongside partners, but also empowering citizens to use their data in the way they want is powerful as well. I mean, we all know this, that private sector organizations, large social media firms, and others use our data to sell us Pepsi and tennis shoes. Why shouldn't we use data to deliver very much needed resources to help families lift themselves out of multi-generational poverty?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Justin, how do we avoid a simplistic one-size-fits-all model for early childhood services? Instead, focusing on the specific needs of a child, I guess, all of our little people are very special, aren't they? And every parent will want to know that their child is treated as an individual through these digital services. So how do we do that and sort of, you know, make it a really user-centric service approach?
Almost every day, a situation or an instance where one person in a human services agency like ours in Oklahoma is delivering incredible service to one person on the ground in their community. They're not just providing the individual resource like SNAP benefits or child care subsidy that they're intended to, but they look at the entire array of what's available in the community. And that's beautiful. The problem with that is we serve in just our agency alone a third of the state's population, almost. And so that one-on-one effort, as beautiful as it is not scalable to all the people that need the help that we need. So we have to build systems that really allow for the flexibility to be built within them so that we can serve a really broad array of people with individual needs. So those systems really embrace methodologies like human-centered design, which is really taking over in the human services space, utilizing tools like personas and journey maps to understand the unique needs of people and building systems around them. Government is not the answer to every problem. As we all know, it requires all of us to serve together. So through human-centered design type efforts, as well as embracing and empowering local organizations, I think we can build systems that scale that one-on-one whole person service.
And do you involve parents in the design of your services?
Absolutely. So parents are critically important for us. They are the ones who should be empowered to understand the needs of their individual child, to also engage directly sort of on behalf of the minors in the conversation. And so personas we develop and journeys we develop include both the child and the parents and the workers and then all the community resources around them.
Danielle, in terms of potential learnings, what have you been hearing from other states in the U.S. about the provision of accessible for all childcare initiatives?
I think that states are looking at childcare transformation in a variety of different ways. I'd be remiss if I didn't highlight Oklahoma and their parental voice in seeking childcare. I think that's an important program to highlight. Another example is the state of Hawaii that recently underwent a full programmatic strategy to determine how best to utilize their dollars to ensure that they meet the unique needs of their population. This strategy redesign has proven to increase access to families who are in a very spread out community who traditionally did not access these types of childcare services before. Other states like North Dakota and New York are investing significant amounts of dollars in their childcare programs. For example, New York has just announced an investment of almost $7.6 billion to streamline the application process and link families to services. North Dakota added an additional $66 million to its budget to provide for additional incentives to child care centers to increase the number of families who are eligible to receive subsidies and for a pilot project that will incentivize private employers to contribute money to help cover the employees' child care expense.
Justin, how easy or not, I suppose, is it for government to understand the scale of the problem that parents have accessing child services and then to be able to apply resources effectively? Do they get it, I suppose I'm asking here?
I think government gets the issue. How easy is it for us to access and really have a deep understanding of that is, I would say the answer is not very well at this point. We all understand the concept of resource deserts across our communities, and childcare is one of the most profound deserts in communities in need, but we're building those tools. So we're not there yet. We know it philosophically and intuitively, yet we still need that sort of hard empirical data that can only be gathered through the proper technology. I would tell you again, those tools are coming where they're being built. It's an exciting time, not just because that technology is coming, but also because I have great insight in that there are a number of leaders across the country today in human services who recognize these needs, who are willing to go to bat for families, who are really authentic in their desire to listen and to engage with the community on the ground. You see them all the time touring providers, listening to the people and understanding, trying to understand how they can best utilize the limited resources of government to solve the biggest problems in our community. And access to high-quality childcare is one of those.
Justin, I wonder if you could just give us a really simple example of digitizing childcare. If we look at Oklahoma, I don't know whether it's done through an app or a platform, but just give us a really simple example of how digitized or digital childcare works.
Yeah, so a really simple example for us is for decades, we have required you when you utilize subsidy, when you walk into your childcare provider, to swipe a card to prove that you were there and to check your child in and then swipe your child out with a card. That sounds straightforward. However, with a large system, there's lots of room for error in that. You know, you forget to check your child in, forget to check them out. You know, you lost your card, you left it at home. There's lots of shortfalls in that system. And so over the last year or so, Oklahoma Department of Human Services has created an app for that. And so it geofences, you know, your location to the childcare provider. You're able to check in. It's just much more streamlined. And we've had really good results. And what that allows for us to do is some of the things we've talked about is really empower parents, give them the tools and resources necessary to utilize childcare in a way that really helps their family. And so there are lots of examples like that. But to me, that's the one that came to mind when you asked the question.
Brilliant. Thank you. All right. Well, to round off, let's look at the impact then of government's digital transformation of childcare services on the generations to come. How can these strategies be coordinated and the outcomes properly measured to provide inclusive early childhood programs? Danielle, you go first.
Sure. I will say that transformation in this space takes a life of its own. It can become overwhelming and it feels like, how do you start? How do you stay focused? And one of the things that we have been able to do is really boil it down to 8 priorities for governments to help deliver that exceptional customer experience and outcomes for everyone. One is to enable integrated service delivery, eliminate silos to drive interoperability, design services around the person, accelerate data sharing, optimize use of funding, both federal, state, and local, promote workforce transformation, foster strong digital leadership, and of course, the big bucket of delivering equitable services for all. Now, these still tend to be 8 very large buckets, and we understand that this is not a simple approach. We know that information on each of these priorities can help you stay focused as you're going through that transformation effort.
All right. Same question to you, Justin.
Yeah, I think strategic transformation really starts with foundational philosophy. And across the country, and really, I would guess across the globe, we have this general understanding that, for me, there are 3 components to this philosophy that we can all agree to. The first is childcare and quality childcare should be a piece of the education continuum. The second is it is a part of the family building system. This is where our kids and families engage. And the third is, of course, childcare is economic development. Having proper resources in the community for families to know their child is well cared for begins with a quality local childcare and allows them to engage in the economy going forward. So I think if we start with those foundational philosophies, which I really believe from a national perspective are just now sort of baked in the cake. Everybody believes that. Now we have to build common outcomes together. Transformation requires us to have a common target. So how do we know we're successful in those 3 spaces? And then allow states and countries across the globe to look to achieve outcomes in those spaces in their own way. In a short period of time, that transformation will, the path will become clear because we'll see in the U.S. 50 different ways to try to reach the outcomes that we're trying to achieve, all based in those 3 fundamental philosophies. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today and share that.
Well, look, it's been such a fascinating and enlightening conversation. So thanks to both of you. Danielle, thank you.
Thank you, Kate. It's been my pleasure.
And Justin, big thanks to you.
Hey, Kate, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Well, do join us again for more insight into how governments are delivering technology-driven strategies. Also, subscribe to this series so you won't miss an episode. I'm Kate Borsay. Thanks for listening and goodbye.